Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We welcome back author and lecturer Penny Pierce to talk about her new book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. And at the bottom of the hour, we're going to open the phone lines and take your calls with Penny Pierce. But first, remembering our past guest, Stuart Wilde, and his book, Silent Power, here is Stuart Wilde reading Chapter 5, The Wisdom of Non-Action.
In the writings of the old Taoist teachers, there's a concept called Wu Wei, which is the notion of non-action. Initially, it's hard to understand. Wu Wei teaches that through non-action, the sage gains everything. That in quietude, meditation, and emotional serenity, the sage gains a knowledge of the God force, of the eternal Tao. And in that eternity, he or she has everything. So there's no need to struggle or push to gain respect and material things. In the modern environment, Taoist simplicity doesn't work so well. We usually have to maintain ourselves and pay the rent. We have to participate in modern experiences that were not available in 500 BC when the Tao was written. We have incarnated at this particular time to experience the wonders of the modern world. We need those experiences in order to grow. So non-action in the modern context needs to be slightly modified. We can take the spirit of the Taoist Wu Wei, however, and put that into our life as a further consolidation. Wu Wei is effortless flow. The concept becomes obvious when we compare the difference between striving and working. Striving is leaning emotionally into a goal, a target, yearning for it, feeling pressured by your lack of it, tearing around like a chicken with his head cut off trying to get it. That's striving. Working is moving relentlessly towards your target, one step at a time, in an organized and disciplined way. We can see Wu Wei also in the difference between effort and struggle. In my book, Life Was Never Meant to Be a Struggle, I discuss the fact that many people consider struggle to be honorable. It's a bit silly, really. There's nothing at all honorable about struggling. Usually, if you're struggling, there's something wrong. There's a big difference between struggle and effort. Struggle is action laced with negative emotion. Struggling to finish the job. Struggling to qualify. Struggling to be accepted. Struggling to win people over. Struggling to make ends meet. Effort is a natural part of human existence. You can't walk to the store without effort. You will burn calories getting there, buying your groceries and coming home. Effort is natural. Struggle, however, is effort laced with emotion. It is not the minimal action and flow of Wu Wei. If you find yourself struggling, immediately look to see what the underlying emotion is. Generally, you'll find that you're struggling because the goal you're trying to achieve isn't coming fast enough. For example, you might have a certain financial commitment that requires money to show up quickly, or you might be struggling because your actions are incorrect. Sometimes you're trying to win people over or to convince them of something and they don't want to be won over or convinced. Sometimes struggle comes from having too many things to do, meaning that your life isn't organized. Or struggle can come from the frustration of having placed a goal into a particular time frame only to find that life denies you. As you learn to consolidate silent power, you'll learn to embrace Wu Wei. It's really patience and flow. Moving away from resistance and towards simplicity, relentlessly moving towards your goal with awareness, adjusting your actions as needs be, moving without emotion and without exerting yourself too much. Stay within your balance and capabilities and trust the universal law, the Tao, to bring you those things you need. Non-action is the ability to delegate, to be patient, to wait for things to unfold naturally. It's the ability to perceive where your strongest path lies. That isn't so difficult to do. Review your options in a meditation and decide which feels the strongest. Act on your feelings, not only on your intellect. Wu Wei is manifest in the ability to turn back. Retreat can sometimes be the most powerful tool in your bag of tricks. It's the ability to walk away when things aren't right, the ability to leave a relationship if it doesn't work, the ability to say no when people are trying to suck you into actions that are degrading, or when things don't fit into your ideals of spirituality of proper action, of goodness. When you can say no, you are free. When you have to have the job, or you're obliged by need to act in a certain way, when you have to win somebody's friendship, when you have to have $5,000 by next Thursday, you're not free, you're in prison. So Wu Wei is accepting life and not forcing it. It's being aware of the ebb and flow of the seasons, aware of the spirituality of all things, aware that in the great abundance of the God force, there is no time. It is knowing when to act and not acting until you know. You can wait forever if you have to. You are eternal. Wu Wei is being content with what you are, with who you are, and what you have now. It's knowing that abundance and experiences and relationships of real worth come only when and if you're settled. When you're balanced, the universe provides. More will always be there. Wu Wei is the act of not pushing, not forcing. Be the silent, controlled person who is moving relentlessly towards freedom and away from restriction, towards your goals, one step at a time, in an organized, patient way. Wu Wei is also the ability to get around the blocks you experience as you try to materialize ideas and goals. When life doesn't want to dance to your tune, start by asking yourself these questions. Am I in the right place? Am I too early or too late? Am I going too fast? Do I need more patience? Do I need time to consolidate, to create an energy within myself that is compatible with my goal? Am I trying for something that is too far in the distance? Do I need to set a goal closer to where I am now? Ask yourself, is what I want appropriate? Does my plan infringe on other people? Does it require them to be something they don't want to be, to do things they don't want to do? If I'm involving other people, what's in it for them? Maybe the resistance comes from the fact that you've forgotten to include them. Have I looked after and honored everybody? Make sure they're happy and ready to perform. Is what I want self-indulgent? Will it assist me in growing and becoming a better person, in achieving a more fulfilling life? Or am I just indulging myself?
That was Stuart Wilde's audiobook, Chapter 5, The Wisdom of Non-Action. Is our species in the process of substantially changing the way we perceive reality? Our guest, author Penny Pierce, believes so. She was a guest on the show last year talking about her book, Frequency, The Power of Personal Vibration, which details how to find your home frequency, the personal vibration that emanates from the soul. Her recent book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention, is her third book, completing the trilogy on the topic of transformation. Her book discusses the issues of right and left brain, duality, centering yourself, becoming the center, and the pitfalls of multitasking. Penny says we will be moving away from what's known as linear perception and using something called spherical perception. Penny Pierce is a gifted intuitive empath with deep psychological understanding, visionary ability, and business sense. She's one of the early pioneers in the intuition development movement since the mid-70s. She's a very popular author, lecturer, counselor, and trainer. And we welcome her back. Penny, welcome to Another News.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be back.
Well, hey, this is your third book in the Transformation Trilogy. The first two are The Intuitive Way and Frequency. Can you tell listeners how these three books fit together?
Yes, the first book, Intuitive Way, is a course on intuition development. And it's still very classic. You know, it seems to just keep selling, and it's pretty international as well. And I think intuition is the first step in really in developing a sense of how transformation is going to occur. And that subject has just fascinated me for years, so I guess all these books rotate around that. But intuition's the first piece, and then several years passed, and then I got, I think the acceleration on the world really made us aware that we're actually beings made out of energy, that we're not just separate bodies, you know, with empty space in between us, that we're all vibrating, and everything's vibrating. So that was when frequency came forth, and the whole idea that we could manage our energy and do things with it and actually accelerate our transformation by working with our own vibration. And it's kind of a whole different way of thinking about ourselves. So that was the second step, huge step, actually, in seeing how the new consciousness was going to occur. And then a couple more years passed, and now I was saying to myself, well, what's the next thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I kept seeing the word attention everywhere. It just, like, highlighted, you know, and the word perception also. And I started thinking, wow, yeah, attention. We have attention deficit disorder, you know, and it really is the power of being able to pay attention in very skillful ways that's going to cause this leap of perception or transformation. So I started to look into that and, you know, what is it? What's going to change? So that's what the new book's about, is the total shift of the way we perceive, and that means reality changes when perception changes, and so does your identity. So we become a new kind of human being, living in a new kind of reality that is hard to understand from being in the old reality looking to the new reality. You know what I mean? It's like we're inside the old one, and it's hard to sense what the transformed reality is going to be like.
Well, you talk about the information age and moving from there to the intuition age, and can you explain that a little bit further to listeners?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it starts even further back, and probably even further than this, but going back to the industrial age, where, you know, we really got hold of printing presses and machines and mechanical thinking processes, and those built up momentum and things started accelerating, and eventually we got computers, and then that got going faster and faster, and then it made us leap into the information age. So we went from physical, which was industrial, into mental, which is the information age, where we are now. But I think we're at the end of it. We're right at the last gasp of the information age, because we're still operating on an old linear model of perception, an inner geometry of linear-based perception. It's as though we have to do A, B, C, D, and E, and we have to process discrete bits of information all, you know, in a sequential way and get to the proof at the end of the line, you know, and it's just too slow. We just can't do it anymore. And we're very overwhelmed right now. Plus, that overwhelm causes us then to be more distracted, and we get, you know, really a lot of fragmentation in our attention.
I've heard that from a lot of people lately, just speaking with them, they're overwhelmed. A couple of people had said that word to me today. And you mentioned in the book about there's so much information being processed by the left brain. Can you talk about some of the things that you write about regarding left and right brain here?
Yeah, well, it fits right in with the whole leap into the intuition age now, you see, because as we get to the end of the information age, you know, that means we've been processing data very largely with the left brain, which is where we make things conscious and we analyze and we prove things and lock things down and make things compartmentalized, and that slows everything down. So in order to move out of that modality, we're going to have to shift into the right brain, which is kind of like a doorway. It opens us mainly through intuition. So intuition is a key aspect of moving out of the left brain into the right brain, and then into the body, and then into the field, and into the soul. But the first step is really moving out of left brain to right brain. and recognizing the difference between those two states, you know, and learning to rock back and forth between the two parts of our brain, or the upper brain, so that we don't allow the left brain to be the boss anymore. You know, we've sort of gotten associated and identified with our left brain, which if it goes too far, it becomes ego. You know, we get stuck in it.
Oh, very interesting. And so there is an integration with the, while in the information age, of the left and right brain to process the information. And then how does that work with the intuitive age, and how does that come together?
Right. Well, I think we're going to reach this point of like where all our circuits are going to kind of fry, and we're going to go, you know, and not be able to do it in this nice, neat, logical order anymore. And what will happen is that we will get a sense of a huge impression of a pattern of knowledge all at once without any logical explanation. We'll just get it, and it'll come in maybe through the body, through the instincts, through the cells, just as a sense of a pattern of sensory information, even maybe, where that then will come in and need to gently filter into the left brain to make sense. And it will in its own timing. But we're going to learn more and more to just get things immediately in the moment through, I call it, direct knowing. You could call it intuition as well, but I think direct knowing is even more than intuition in a way, because it's through the body. It's the ability to read energy information that's coming through vibration right through the body,
that,
you know, and then decode it, which is left brain function.
Well, you mentioned, you know, I've heard that there's an electromagnetic field around the brain, but you were saying it's around the heart also.
Yes, there's quite a bit of research done around that with heart math, and Joseph Chilton Pierce has done a lot of work on that, where they found that the heart contains neurons and ganglia, and that there's an electromagnetic field actually that extends out from around the heart that's, I mean, 5 to 15 feet in diameter.
Wow.
And that the neurons in the heart are the same kind that are in the brain. So in some ways, the heart and brain are connected to each other. So the heart is a kind of brain. You know, and we're starting to understand through, you know, neuroscience so much about the plasticity of our brain and our consciousness, and how it can regrow cells, and how we can change habits of the mind.
That's one thing you write about extensively in Chapter 4, Unlearn Old Habits, and I think that's really a big deal as well, because we learn all these things, and then you have to unlearn some things as well. But meanwhile...
Well, let me just say something about that, for Jeff, for a second, because
sure.
I think we don't even realize that we've learned habits. We think that reality is just the way it is. And we don't realize that we learned to identify reality in a certain way from, you know, the prevailing winds of our cultures and the whole assumptions that previous generations have made about suffering and pain, and that this world is a terrible place of pain and suffering, you know, and that we might as well resign ourselves to violent behavior and things that seem inhuman. And what I'm saying is that, hey, this is just an old learned behavior. You can catch yourself in that, and you can change it. You have to realize that you can have your life be a different way, and you can change it. And that's what's up right now for people.
Well, you're going in a great direction here, but I want to take you back into something that I'm glad you talked about, and that is... what's going on right now with our attention and our attention span, and with the digital technology in our hands. And, you know, I was thinking about that, about what you wrote about in that chapter. And there was a time in the 40s that people gathered around the radio to watch, they were actually watching the speaker on the radio. And then people had screens in their living room, the television. People gathered around the screens. Now it's in your hand. And people right. are mesmerized by this all-encompassing device that they're walking out in traffic. They're
yes. I call it screen addiction.
Tell listeners about what you wrote about here.
Well, you know, it's sort of a carryover of the fragmentation kind of thing, I think, that as we started to, let me go back a second, because I think the world is speeding up, and literally, the vibration of the physical plane of the physical Earth is getting faster and faster, but our consciousness is getting faster and faster as well, and I think that has caused the acceleration of the information age into the Internet. You know, I mean, not just computers, but now the information age went into the Internet, and now it's going so fast that we have so many forms of information. And that sense of access to information and each other is almost like it's bordering a little on the spiritual values, because in the spiritual realm, everything is interconnected. It is immediate. It is in the present moment. You know, and I think we've always been longing for that. We want that kind of connection with our soul group, you know, and our like-minded others. And I think that technology is giving us a facsimile of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
You get your cell phone and you get the dopamine rush, you know. I'm going to miss out on some latest thing that you know, connects me with somebody or validates who I think I am, you know. And
is that a measured, the dopamine?
I think so, uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Exactly. It's a kind of a brain rush that comes in of feeling good by feeling connected. And, you know, there's also a lot of work about people are becoming more self-involved now, more narcissistic even, you know, wanting to paste their photos on Twitter and Facebook and everywhere and, like, look at me, I'm the best at whatever I am, you know, and get recognition for it. I kind of think that is a spiritual predecessor, that this is a phase that people are going through where they're trying to recognize the self, meaning the soul, the real self, but what they're getting in the first stages of it is ego. You know, that I hope will fade, but right now we're seeing, you know, some of the younger generations are really, really stuck in narcissistic behavior at this point, and have very little sense of empathy for other people, which is troublesome to me.
Well, you have these industries really making bank on that, and they're going to try to keep it in that form for a while, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect there's severe repercussions. But as you're pointing out, these are transformations to be made, and we're all making them. And if the older generation or the older group in this particular generation starts transforming, then the rest will begin to as well, and then no more Facebook.
Maybe so. Maybe it'll just be all in our heads, you know, just direct telepathy or something.
Do you actually see that happening, Penny?
Not immediately, but I do think there's going to be probably in the near future, I think, quite a rise in telepathic reality. I think we're going to start reading each other's minds, understanding about events coming, almost like a precognitive sense of reading the waves in the field around us, sensing energy and vibrations very strongly. I hear from my clients now all the time how empathic they're becoming and how it's bothering them. You know, they feel overwhelmed and they're getting too much information, or they're getting a kind of crowded feeling where they know something, they're becoming aware of something, but they don't know what it is.
Well,
it's hard to decipher it.
What's the diagnosis there when you hear about that?
I think it's a symptom of the fact that the acceleration on the planet causes our bodies to accelerate. And that means we vibrate faster, and that means we become more ultra-sensitive. And it also means that we become more aware of things that were suppressed, you know, like subconscious fears and things that no one ever wanted to look at, like child abuse or taboos and things like that that now cannot remain hidden. They're surfacing and coming into the conscious mind of in our daily lives, which would be, you know, our daily reality, and in society as well. I mean, these things are coming into the news, into current events. So lots of secrets and things that used to be able to be hidden can no longer be hidden. And that means we're becoming so conscious of these things that are fairly disturbing. Until we understand how to look at them with kind of the soul's eye view or the God's eye view to understand what they're really all about, and then we can go, oh, gosh, it was just that. I see. And then let it go. You know, but as long as we resist that stuff, it just gains power. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one, especially with activists that make up a lot of the listenership of this station. And we have to resist a lot of these terrible policies that are being made and not in favor of the public. And so you have to resist. And when somebody says don't resist, become, you know, more passive, or it doesn't make sense.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying
saying you're saying it, but I hear it a lot with other people who, you know, talk about the power of intention and things like that.
Well, I don't like the word intention anymore because I think that is about old perception. It's about willpower. And in new perception, where we're going in the intuition age, it will be about attention, not in a linear fashion, because intention means we try to get something to happen in the future. Attention means it's already in the present moment with you. So this is a complicated thing to try to explain, but we're moving into a state where everything's going to be in the present moment with us. There will be no more future, no more past. It will all be in the present moment with us at different frequencies of the present moment. So your future might be at a higher frequency of your present moment, and if you could just raise your vibration to that level and get into that state of mind and emotion, you could be in it now. You could draw it right in now. You don't have to go through that long cause and effect process that we used to think had to happen in order for us to have something.
We talked about that last week, cause and effect, and weeks before that, we talked a lot about Carl Jung's theory, psychological theory on the shadow, and duality. In your book, you're talking about moving beyond duality, and that's a tough one also to absorb. But
it is while you're in duality to try to understand what it's like to not be in duality.
And I want to talk about that, Penny, but we're at the bottom of the hour, and I want to open the lines to take calls because I remember some listeners were some big fans of yours, and maybe we can get them on the phone line to ask some questions or comments. So, listeners, the number to call is 212-209-2900. If you have any questions or comments for Penny Pierce, the author of the book, Leap of Perception, this is the third book, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Our guest is Penny Pierce, author of the new book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention. And we're opening the lines for questions and comments. You can call 212-209-2900. We haven't done this in almost a year. So we do have a call. We're going to that call right now. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Go ahead, caller.
I say these past couple of years, I don't know where it comes from, but I think it may have something to do with what the person is talking about. But I've become very interested in things mathematical. When I was younger, I was no math genius or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems I'm just very interested in things mathematical now. And I think it has something to do with what the speaker is talking about. So I just called to make that comment.
Great point. Penny, what do you think of that?
Well, I'm sorry, Jeff. I couldn't hear anything of what the caller was saying. It somehow was all garbled from my end.
Oh, okay.
Can you repeat it for me?
I sure can. The caller had mentioned that in the past couple of years, he's noticed that he's been interested in the math behind things.
Mathematical things.
Mathematical things.
Mm-hmm.
Is that related to what you're speaking about, Penny?
I think that the mathematical patterns behind reality, to me, they're also very fascinating. I do a lot of work with numerology and work with sort of a higher, I often dream in numbers and geometries and things. I think that higher consciousness takes us directly into mathematics, and that if you can not so much think of it with the left brain, but actually feel it, feel into it, and understand it directly with your body, that it's a pretty high sort of doorway into some, you know, pretty higher states of consciousness.
Leonard, what do you think of that?
It's interesting that I have more of an intuitive interest in it than a logical sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like it's like you say, like something coming from a higher realm, being fed down into my being. You know, it's very interesting. It's very interesting. I find, you know. Like I said, I was never a math genius, but it seems that's the way, whatever it is working with me. Yeah.
That's great. I kind of share that as well. I'm much more interested in physics than I had been when I was in high school and college. Leonard, thank you so much for sharing that.
Okay.
We're going to go to another call, and hopefully you can hear this caller, Penny.
Yeah.
Go ahead, caller. Yeah. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I have two questions. Number one, can you explain in a little more detail what you mean by the energy of the planet's vibration increasing? What does that mean? And number two, can you tell me whether you're hopeful about our future given the terrible state of, you know, the climate, global warming, and all of the environmental destruction that we're facing? Are you hopeful about our future?
Mm-hmm. What I mean about the planet's vibration increasing, I don't know why it is. I've had dreams about it where I saw that there was some kind of cosmic event that was flowing through the solar systems and affecting us, kind of raising the frequency. I don't know whether it was photons or something, but it may have started in a semi-physical state and is being drawn into the physical world. You know, of course, they've measured the Schumann resonance in the center of the Earth, and it's increasing. But, of course, we also know in our own experience that time seems to be speeding up, that everything is going faster. And even the Mayan, you know, predictions had, 64 billion years worth of acceleration mapped out in these periods called underworlds, where each one was 20 times faster than the one before it, and it finished up at the end of 2011 in a period that was 1 year long. You know, so I think that this is something that has been known for quite a while. Now, I think that affects our bodies. I think it affects our emotions and our mind, that we are starting to have the physical dimension go fast enough that we're starting to bleed through into the non-physical world, which used to be quite separated because of the energy gap. But now the vibrations are merging. So we're having much more bleed through from the non-physical dimensions, like, you know, people are having near-death experiences and seeing angels and non-physical beings. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that are coming through to us from the non-physical. So I think, you know, it's a subjective thing for each person that we're experiencing in our own way. And in terms of being optimistic, I personally am quite optimistic. I think we're in the middle of the most exciting time ever on the planet, where we have the chance to live physically through a process of real transformation of consciousness, and not just change, but something where we actually add a new dimension into our total reality, and we change while we're still physical. That's why I'm happy to keep staying alive as long as I possibly can, because I want to keep living through this. But I think, yes, part of the process is that we have to empty out the subconscious mind of all its fears. And as that happens, which is what we're in the middle of right now, it looks pretty awful. All the junk comes up. All the fear comes up. All the then reaction to the fear comes up. You know, let's push it back down again. Let's try to be in control. Let's not let, you know, let the ego die. You know, let's stay in, on top of everything. And we're seeing that in politics and where the power, you know, structures are fighting to stay in control in the old way, in the old traditional way. But we're also simultaneously seeing innovation just springing up everywhere through the cracks, grassroots. All kinds of people are inventing things and all kinds of new things are happening. So part of the old system will basically stop functioning, I think. It's not that it's good or bad. It's just not going to work anymore.
Penny, we have a few more calls. Caller, do you have a response?
Just, it's an excellent show. This is really very, your answer on hope was very enlightening, because this is an easy time to be discouraged. There's so much going to be happening very quickly, I think, with the environmental damage we're looking at, increasing poverty, violence against women. And it's hard to keep hopeful in a time like this as we do resist and struggle. So thank you for your beautiful answer.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air with Penny Pierce.
Hi, how are you, Jeff? Great show. I love your show. You bring up so many interesting points. A perfect segue to what you were saying before, which is something happening from the cosmic realm. A big topic on this show is geoengineering and the chemtrails. And what's your thoughts of a possible alien intervention into this world to try to destroy a lot of the human population and take over the planet? I know that might sound a little bit far-fetched, but you know, there was a New York Times article today about Miami being so vulnerable to the water now rising, the latest thing that happened in the Philippines. Are we headed for a serious global catastrophe? And what's your thoughts on higher extraterrestrial beings?
That's
okay, I missed every other word on that one.
Oh.
I'm sorry again.
Oh, that's interesting. Max, when the volume of the caller is low, it seems to cut out for...
It's up all the way.
It's up all the way. Okay. Well, let me see if I can sort of put this one together. I thought you were listening, Penny.
I am. I was. I heard extraterrestrial. I heard the flood thing.
Right, I thought you could hear it fully. Okay, let me think. Okay, so we often talk...
Also the chemtrails, which is a big topic of your show.
Of course, I'll begin with that. Let me try to rephrase it. Penny, for some reason, can't hear the full...
question.
Yeah, the full question. Yeah. Penny, what we often talk about on the show is geoengineering and the aerosol operations. And the caller is asking if there would be any kind of alien or extraterrestrial intervention that would either reduce the population. Is that correct, caller?
Yes.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I just saw something on TV about that, Alien Files, and this was one of the theories there, you know, and I thought immediately of you. I was like, wow, I wonder if that chemtrail situation is some type of a way to depopulate the globe. And, you know, even Fukushima, this is supposedly one of the worst disasters. If this typhoon hit that Fukushima...
Okay, okay, I got you. Okay, and it is... Is this effort, these like Fukushima disasters, these massive storms, some kind of effort by extraterrestrials to decrease the population on the planet? And I might add to this, if we change our perception to a more compassionate race, would that automatically shift something?
Yes, I think that we have to remember that we have different lenses that we view these things through, and that a lot of the things that give us, that create fear for us, we're looking at it just as a physical problem. When you look at things from the spiritual point of view, it's very different. I find that when I go right into the direct connection with the soul and with spirit, that a lot of these fearful things seem to evaporate, that they aren't the real problems, that a lot of the things that are happening, like Fukushima or the, you know, these disasters, are to help people, either to help people leave the planet if they need to leave, if they want to leave in mass quantities. And some people do. I think it's a compassionate thing that there are some people who feel they cannot go on and open up enough to let that much light in and to change their reality that drastically. And that it's compassionate for them to then leave and come back again when they feel they can handle it. I also feel that these are ways that we all can open our hearts and learn to be more compassionate beings, more like our true nature, to reach out to others and not go into fear. It's all right now. It's a test about, are we going to choose fear or are we going to choose unity and love? Are we going to stay in the old perception or go into the new perception? You know, and we can wallow around and get really afraid and look at how awful things are going to be and how everything's working against us. And that's left brain.
Plus,
Or, you know, we can go right into the direct connection with what's going on energetically and move straight into the new perception. And that's my thought.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt, Penny.
Yeah.
And you were saying you can focus in on all the negative things like that. And that is a very interesting thing there too, because you often hear where your attention goes, your energy flows. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Hi. Love your show, Jeff. My name is Yusuf. I'm from Long Island. Ms. Pierce, my question is, in the process of trying to change your perception, it seems that some people are more sensitive than others. Could you speak to how that is and why that is? And do we have some type of superconductor inherently within us that we need to tap into? I'll leave it there and I'll listen off the air.
Okay. I guess if there were a superconductor, it would just be the soul. You know, it is that sense of, you know, first of all, to understand the change between perceptions, the old perception is linear. It has cause and effect reality. You go step by step along lines toward a goal in the future, or you go back into the past, or you go into other spaces. You go along timelines and space lines. But in the new perception, you're in the center of a big sphere, and that ball around you is the present moment. It's also your conscious mind. It's your attention span. And it changes constantly. It expands and contracts throughout the entire unified field. So in a certain way, in the new perception, there is never an outside world. You are in the middle of a huge ball, and everything you think of is inside that ball with you. If you think of something new, the ball has just expanded to include it. So there actually is never anything outside of you. And this changes your perception of reality tremendously. Because now, if there's nothing outside of you, there are no enemies then, because everything's inside you, and that means it's part of you, that you know about it, and it knows about you. There's communication and communion and cooperation and co-creation and mutual support. And you start to get it, that what the golden rule really means, you know, that there is, if you hurt someone else, you do hurt yourself. Or you hurt yourself, you hurt someone else. You know, it's so interconnected. That superconductor or the sensitivity factor is really, truly, how much you stay inside your present moment and in your body with your mind so that you can pay attention and notice what you're noticing in the moment so that you can pick up the signals. But if you're projected into the future with your mind, you can't pick up the signals that are happening in the present moment and you get blocked.
Penny,
does that make sense?
It makes sense to me, and that is connected to the donut concept that you had pointed out. Can you briefly mention that to listeners?
It's a whole huge chapter in the book, but briefly, the idea is that when you project your mind out through lines into the future, the past, fictitious realities, other people's realities, other spaces, other you know, locations, that life becomes kind of like a donut. Everything's out beyond you. And you, in the center of the crosshairs, right in the middle, are like in an empty donut hole. So actually, you can't feel yourself because your mind is gone. It's projected away from you. You've evacuated out of the center of yourself. And you can't feel the soul talking to you because it comes in the present moment through the body, right through the cells. It's right in the center of you. So if your mind is projected away, you can't get your intuition, and it blocks your intuition from flowing. And that creates the what I call the donut and the donut hole. And that's a model of reality. When you have the donut hole, you feel empty and hollow, and that means you can't feel yourself, and often then you feel like a lack of self-worth, and you want to fill up that hole. Some people do it by trying to eat a lot or have sex a lot or watch a lot of TV or whatever. But they never feel full because they believe there's an empty hole in the center. The change is where you reel in all the projections and you come back into your body and you bring it all inside with you and you flip that donut into a ball. You occupy the center and then radiate out from the center and it turns into a sphere.
Wow, that makes sense to me, Penny. We got a couple calls on the line. We're going to go to the next call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Jeff.
Hi, yes.
Hey, pleasure to talk with you and your guest. Fascinating program, as always. My question is about the potential of wrong intuition. I'm an intuitive person, and I feel like I've been training that since childhood. But I also think that sometimes we lose sight of the fact that we could just be wrong. What do you take, for example, or what do you say, for example, about, let's say you meet a person and they kind of give you a bad impression. And you say, there's something about that person I don't really like. And then maybe in a week or in a month or in a few years even of being a coworker of the person, you realize, you know what, I was wrong about that person. That person's not half bad. I don't like maybe this little attribute or that little thing might rub me the wrong way. But that person's a quality person, just for a general example. So my question is just about, what about the potential of wrong intuition?
Okay. I think that often intuition is tinged with your own personal opinions and our own personal subconscious fears and blockages. So in the early stages of intuition development, it's very important to clear the subconscious mind and to clear your own, you know, beliefs and things that are based on other people's ideas and on fear or negative thinking, even if they're very subliminal, you know. And so sometimes these things where you call it wrong intuition can actually be good teaching experiences where you make a judgment about someone and then you realize later that, oh my gosh, that was really about me. That was something I had, that's something I don't like about myself, and this person matched it, and it made it obvious to me. So now I know that this is something I have that was a blockage. You know, so you can use these things even as a way to clear yourself. I think that in order to develop accurate intuition, you have to trust yourself. That means trust your soul, trust your, I call it your inner perceiver. It's that function of your own mind that helps you notice what you notice. And I think everything you notice is evolutionary. So it's not wrong. It's that you just notice something that might have been in your way of being more intuitive and more clear. You know, and so that inner perceiver will bring you both forward-moving things that are totally clear, but also the things that are in the way so that you can get rid of them and move faster.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, caller. Great question. We have another call on the line.
Yes, good evening. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Caller, can you speak up just a bit?
Sure. Number one is, I heard earlier a caller saying about aliens coming to the planet.
Yes.
And when he's saying about aliens, by mean, what are you trying to say by mean by that, aliens?
Well,
yes,
hello.
I'm here. I'm here.
That was interesting.
Yes,
yeah,
here.
I didn't catch much of that actually.
We're going to go to another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings. Thank you. Thank you, Penny. I am a devotee of the intuitive way. I bought my book about, 12, 14 years ago, and I just read it over and over. But I just
like... That's great.
Thank you. We thank you. We, because it is a paradigm shift happening. My daughter is a trans channel of light energy, which is energy that has never incarnated, that speaks through her. People could call the spirit, God, whatever. Mm-hmm. But everything that you're saying tonight, and would you say, that's just the way I feel, that's what I think, that is absolutely confirmed in the thing she's been channeling for now about 14 years.
That oh, excellent.
She totally resisted it because she said that sounds scary and crazy when it came to her, but she realized that this was a commitment that she made before she came in this body, and she surrendered, and she's doing phenomenal work, and everything that you've said tonight has been confirmed by light energy or those from the higher dimensions and the higher vibrational realm. So I would like you to know that it's just not my thinking, Miss Penny. It is universal shift that is absolutely happening. And I so thank you for your contribution.
Well, thank you. I think, you know, we have to, when you start working with your own personal frequency, there is a choice to be, you know, focused in the fear realms or in, you know, there's a certain choice you make, a fundamental choice at some point, that I'm not going to add more fear to the world. And as you do that, and as you stop adding fear and more karma into the world, you start to develop what I call skillful perception, which then helps you raise your vibration. And as you do, you start to notice higher sort of explanations for why things are happening in the world. You know, and it's not just the physical explanation. I mean, I'm not negating the physical or trying to overcome it, because I think by going into the physical world is where we find our final enlightenment. Only staying in the physical is a kind of, I call it in this book, I call it the immersion process. We have involution where we come into the world, then we have evolution where we go out of the world, but we've been stuck for lifetimes.
Penny, we have to leave it there. We've run out of time.
That went fast.
it did. If listeners want to contact you, how do they reach you?
Through my website, which is just my name, pennypierce.com.
Penny, thank you so much for being on In Other News. And your book, Leap of Perception, The Transforming Power of Your Attention, is really just another amazing book. Thank you again for writing this trilogy. And would like to have you back on soon.
Love to do it. Thank you so much, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady, and thank you very much for those wonderful calls and for supporting WBAI.